All right, welcome to Security Guy Radio at Black Hack 2016. What's your name, sir?
Jim Rivas.
And Jeeves, what's the name of your company?
It's Cloud Security Alliance. We're a nonprofit global association. We build security best practices for the cloud.
I'm a nonprofit. Now, not technically.
Okay.
But
yeah, that's the way it tends to work.
It happens that way.
We have a lot in common.
But it's funny you should say it. I'm actually thinking of doing that for this show because what I do is for everybody, and it's educational, right? And
yep.
I'm not in it to – I'd like to make some money someday, but when I heard that you're a nonprofit, I was intrigued because I think this stuff is so important for people to get out there and learn. And sometimes if you're trying to sell it, that's a different approach to saying I'm giving it away. And people listen more maybe when you say, listen, we're here to educate and talk about it. So tell us what you do to educate and raise awareness for cyber world.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right that you need to be a nonprofit because there needs to be this trust in terms of a vendor neutrality when you talk about here are the best ways to do this.
Right.
So what we decided, it was actually about 8 years ago, you could see cloud was going to be a big deal. And we needed to find ways where we can actually build consensus best practices and educate that. So we took sort of a hybrid approach of let's be both a standards organization as well as a social network. And so we built a lot of work groups that did this sort of collaboration and research online, and they could be banks, they could be hackers, researchers. And so we put this all together, and so we do a combination of online, and then we tag along to events like Black Hat and RSA and others, so we can sort of spread the word in person as well.
So what are some of your vertical markets inside your company that are specific training?
So we do training and education and research, really based on research that'll be both technical sort of verticals, like maybe we want to really focus on encryption or key management or threat research. But then we'll also look at specific industries where it's very important and they've got unique needs. Like in financial services, they've got a lot of compliance issues and auditing issues and things like that. So we'll break it down both by vertical industries. Financial services tends to be the one that they're always first in terms of adopting new practices and information security.
Yeah.
So we see them. But then most of what we do ends up being different types of technologies or governance issues. And then also you put in the global side. We've got to translate it and we've got to look at, well, what are the local issues? Because you actually find out in Europe, funny enough, they don't necessarily trust having all their information in the United States. So we got to figure out ways.
No, it's totally different. Right. And like Germany, you're not allowed to save something for 30 days if it's personal information. Right.
Yep.
So if you have to write a standard, you have to know that. How do you get to know all those things? Because every state, country, city could be a different compliance issue. It's a daunting task.
Yeah, it's you got to take, again, this power of the social network. So by doing that, we have a chapter in Germany. They understand that. And so it ends up being a collaboration between our people and then different parts of the German government and German industry.
Yeah.
BSI is their group. Don't tell me what it stands for, but they develop a lot of the best practices there. And so they actually use what we do as sort of the foundation of their best practices. So that's how you have to do it.
How big is your the organization? Like,
so we've got 76,000 individual members. We've got about 350 corporate members.
76,000?
Yeah, and
wow.
our staff, the people who actually listen to me sometimes, we've only got about 40 worldwide.
Yeah. Wow.
But really what it ends up is out of that 76,000 individual members, there's about 1,000 really committed, very smart researchers that we end up herding the cats, the volunteers that do that. And so, and they're just awesome. So, but yeah, we've got a pretty good footprint and we're present in just about any country that's, you know, talking
and
about cloud.
Membership's funded, you're funded through membership, a membership fee.
Yeah. Corporate membership. Some of the training is, we'll charge for some of our conferences, but the big message is our research itself. We make it all free.
Yeah.
We want people to use it, abuse it, adopt it, improve it, make it better. And you go to our website and you can find all of it.
How do you actually present the training? Is that all online or is that with all of your members being able to host in their local areas?
It's a combination.
Okay.
We really encourage our chapters to do a lot of it. We'll do it at some of these central conferences. But yeah, sometimes you need to do distance-based learning to do a lot of that. But we actually find that some of our chapters, they'll virally translate it into the local language and things like that. So it's really, it's a pretty much an all-of-the-above sort of evangelization and training model.
So the details of the local training is really pushed down to your chapter's levels.
Yeah, the logistics of that, as well as training partners. We try to do that through other third parties as well. We really focus on what are the best practices, what's the important research, and then we build the core courseware.
So what's the newest or the what's the most popular right now from a cybersecurity perspective that, that a lot of the chapters are looking into and trying to dive into the research with?
Yeah, we're certainly getting a lot of interest. It might seem like it's a stretch for us being Cloud Security Alliance, but we're doing a lot of work in Internet of Things. Mm-hmm. And the reason is that IoT is going to be provisioned by cloud. It's going to store its data there. And ultimately, the cloud is actually going to be its security system. So there's a lot on that. We're actually looking at how do you take blockchain and those sorts of concepts to be able to manage from the cloud IoT, because IoT is just, you can't even wrap your brain about how large this is going to be.
Right.
You actually find that you can't even buy some of the chips for IoT, like per device. You put them in a big box and they weigh it and they say, here's your 20 pounds of IoT.
Sure.
And there's so many crazy applications of that. And so the only way we're going to bring sanity to that is through cloud. And so that's a very important area of research. And, you know, there's certainly a lot of others, but things are just, compute's growing so fast that we've got to work smart and get the human sort of out of the loop of some areas. You know, think of, it's the same thing as self-driving cars. We got to have self-driving security.
Now, this is such a large initiative. How do you organize it? How do you know that the guy in California is keeping it straight? Right? Because there's a lot of verticals on this, a lot of people working on it. Is there an overall fact checker or something that says, okay, let's go through and double check that the research is right on everything? Because there's so many places that are different.
Yeah, we never make mistakes in our research. I don't know what you're talking about. the key thing for us is you've got to have peer review.
Not the mistakes as much as it's just so much.
It's got to evolve. It's got to change.
It's got to change, right? And there's so much diversity. It's, you know, the subtleties between California
too.
And Nevada may be this much, right?
Yeah. What we find is how you got to do it is transparency. Just like, you know, social networks. If you go say something in public, the Twitter is going to correct you in minutes.
I get corrected all the time.
And so that's the thing that we find is we try to do within a working group, hey, you guys do some peer review, you guys check this, but then let's put it out into a larger community, let them check it. But ultimately, the world comes back to us, and we see that just every day. We see people say, hey, that actually was the best practice 3 months ago. We've evolved now, and we're doing things better. And we're going to need that model because a lot of security, they say, hey, that was the best practice, like ISO 27001. That was developed 20 years ago.
Right. Or something 5 minutes ago can change that fast. Yeah.
That's right.
How do we get a hold of you? How do we get a hold of the organization?
CloudSecurityAlliance.org and also probably most of the bars here in Vegas and then rehab afterwards. So I'll be all over.
We will be there.
I am so happy to hear this is going on, and you have a great attitude about it, right?
Yeah.
You just seem like we trust them.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
you're positive
education
about it.
Is,
it's educational. It's happy. It's place to be.
That's great.
I've not only been doing security forever, I'm also a grandfather. You got to trust a grandfather.
You got to do that.
Yeah. We're looking out
you
for
need
the
more
ones.
White hair like me, and I'm not a grandfather.
Yeah. Well,
thanks for coming on Security Guy
Radio.
Right, appreciate
you.
It.
Appreciate
thank
it.
You. All right, thanks.
Appreciate it.
All right. Beautiful. About 10.
All right, sounds
good. All right. Sir, welcome to Security Guy Radio. What's your name?
My name is Chris Pogue. I'm the Chief Information Security Officer at Nuix.
And we're here at Black Hat 2016.
We are.
Tell us what Nuix does.
Nuix is a software company predominantly that does e-discovery software, investigation software, and now sort of the natural progression has been into the cybersecurity world because we have such a powerful engine, can ingest lots of data types, so that kind of positions us perfectly to be able to take in that corpus of information, make sense out of it, and help people deflect, detect, react, respond, recover faster.
Now, you are producing a product to protect people, but your job inside the company is to be the protector of the company itself.
I am.
And what kind of challenges does your company have at that level? Because we're assuming that the companies that make the stuff to protect other companies don't have any problems, but of course, you do.
Yeah.
Even
Security
Guard
so
got hacked.
Probably.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. So just a little bit of my background and why I fit into that role as the CISO is prior to becoming the Chief Information Security Officer, I've been a practitioner. I've been a forensics investigator for 17 years.
Oh, cool.
The U.S. Army, IBM, TrustWave, and now at Nuix.
Keep your mic
Nuix.
Up a little bit like that. Okay, good.
And now with Nuix.
Okay.
And so understanding how organizations get breached, what sort of the post-mortem effects of that are, both from a legal perspective as well as just the impact on the organization, kind of positioned me well to fit into that role.
Well, this is unique to Nuix because everybody I've met so far are investigator backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, when I was at Fox and Disney for 10 years, I was the cop on the beat, right? Physical security, but I know a lot about computers.
Mm-hmm.
But when I worked with the IT guys, it was an uncomfortable relationship because I'd say, I got to put this guy in jail, help me out.
Yeah.
Well, we don't do that. We just give you ones and zeros, right?
Right.
And knowing what probable cause is, knowing how to put the case together, is just as critical as getting all the data.
Right.
Right? And so I think Nuix's approach is very unique that I've seen in the business, mm-hmm. that you have this, the background from all those sort of people.
Right.
So what are your internal challenges that you're protecting? You know, are people trying to take your server right. down and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sort of the same stuff. So I also run the professional services arm.
All right.
So I've got all the pen testers, investigators, malware reversers. So we get to see firsthand in the field what's going on.
Yeah.
Take that information, not only extrapolate the intelligent pieces, build it into the software, but also use it in our own organization.
Right.
So we have the same challenges every organization has.
Yeah.
Blocking and tackling, IT hygiene, you know, proper utilization of security countermeasures, right? We see so many times people spend money and think, I've done the right thing, right? I've spent money on this thing.
That's right.
But you haven't developed the process or the people to implement it.
And so it's a lot of it in this kind of litigation happy cyber world right now.
Yeah.
It's get, you know, breached, get sued, and then you have to establish the defensible position of reasonableness. And so how do you establish that? And throwing money at solutions isn't going to give you that anymore.
No.
But well, you have to have the bits and pieces
but
behind
the,
that.
Are you finding that the decision makers at the C-level are buying more into this from a concept point of view? Or, and I'm not talking about internal your company, but when you're going out selling.
Right.
Or are they just throwing the money at it to their subordinate and saying, here's some money, go fix it?
Right. It's kind of a slow... kind of a slow bell curve, right? We've been doing this 20 years, and
right.
it's, the conversation's really no different than it was 20 years ago.
Okay.
What has changed, though, is the legal landscape. Organizations getting sued, held accountable by the FCC, FTC, SEC. That has really changed the game in the in the executive boardroom and
right.
in the board of directors. And so the same conversation is now being listened to. So I'm no longer the lone prophet in the desert saying, thou shalt repent. Now actually people are listening. And they're going, well, how do we actually do that? How do we employ information governance? How do we employ IT hygiene? How do we make our executives smarter so that we can quantify our risk, so we understand our risk appetite? We know what's going to land us in jail. We know what's going to get us sued. We know what's going to lose us business and what's going to lose us face. And then we can employ countermeasures to match whatever that risk profile is. So we can actually stack rank those and have good conversations instead of just risk, 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 money, money, money.
So I'm 55, and some of my counterparts are executives in security business. Some are C-level guys, right?
Mm.
Some are chiefs in police departments. And my generation missed the computer. There's a computer gap, right?
Right.
I happen to have a computer in 84 when there were two floppy drives. All my buddies, what's a computer? That's a stupid thing to have, right?
Yeah.
My guess is that level of people are hesitant on decision-making because they miss the technology.
Right.
Whereas my kids get it, and by the way, people older than me get it because
mm-hmm.
they invented it
right.
in the 70s, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or 50s, 60s, 70s. Are you finding that this is what's going on maybe, that sometimes these initiatives are slow to come out of the barn because
right.
it's just decision-makers aren't grabbing it? They know
yeah.
they got to do it, but how and all that kind
right.
of stuff.
Yeah, there is there's a definite generational gap.
Yeah.
And where we've seen success with clients in making those connection points is showing the nexus from the cyber world to the physical world.
Yeah.
Right? And so there's been great news articles lately that have really helped us. You know, last week when the gentleman from the St. Louis Cardinals went to jail for intrusions into the Houston Astros. Right now we can show, look, do bad, go to jail.
Sure.
Or with organizations that get sued, you know, protracted litigation, sometimes 5, 6, 7 years. And then the damage to their brand
right.
is, we can put dollar amounts on that now.
That's where they respond
to. Or the opportunity
exactly.
cost. Yeah. Tell us from a tech perspective what separates Nuix's software from other companies that are in the same realm.
Yeah, that's a great question because we just walked from our booth here and we're
right.
passing booth after booth of someone doing the same
sort of stuff. Pretty
competitive
space.
Yeah. It is. And so what I think is there's a lot of people building car parts, and Nuix is building a car.
Oh,
so
that's a good way to put it.
Organizations are doing bits and pieces of what we do. I mean,
you mean like pen testing or VAs, things like that?
Right.
If that's where their focus is, you're
exactly.
doing the whole thing.
Or their software will ingest log files,
right.
or they'll take in, you know, forensic images, or they're good with threat intelligence. Nuix does all of those things. And so it kind of becomes the one-stop shop. And what enables us to do that is the 10 years history we have as an e-discovery firm
sure.
that had to take in all these different file types, make sense out of them, normalize them, allow them to be searchable so that organizations could proceed with litigation.
Yeah, that's the difference. That's just,
it's a huge
difference. So are organizations coming to you and taking your software and implementing it into robust cybersecurity systems they have, or mm-hmm. are they using your software and your team to kind of develop their own hygiene and their own protocols?
It's both.
Okay.
Right. Organizations that have that level of maturity are using us as part of their model. Organizations that aren't mature are using us to build that maturation process.
As a service.
From where do we go from here to, okay, now we can be self-sustaining. And then the other piece of that is we have a field operations team. Right. And as far as I know, we're one of the only security firms that do that. Maybe a handful of others.
Right.
Because we can take field intelligence. Because organizations that say, oh, we rely on intel from our customers, right? That doesn't work. There's NDAs, there's lawsuits, can't be discussed.
Yeah.
You know, investigations can't be discussed. Intelligence agencies, classification can't be discussed. Whereas we can take our data that we get from penetration testing, malware reversing, forensics engagements, IR engagements, we can anonymize it. We can normalize it, we can pump it into the tool, and now all of our users
get the
are aware
of
it.
Yeah.
Right? And so a bank in, you know, Bali somewhere can suddenly be protected from a bank, a piece of malware that we found in a bank in Denver, for example.
Sure.
Very
and so we're enabling the whole world versus just one customer at a time.
Website again?
www.nuix.com.
Spell it for my nieces and nephews.
N as in November, U as in uniform, I as in India, X as in X-ray.
That's the military coming out. I love it.
13
I'm ex-military myself, man.
Are you?
Yeah.
Zulu Foxtrot X-ray. Yeah.
Oh, very cool. Very cool.
Just a policeman. Kind of like service, but not exactly.
Hey, it's the same. We're all fighting the same fight.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on Security Guard Radio. Fascinating conversation, and
my
good luck to Nuix.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks.
Appreciate
good,
it.
Man.
Thanks, Ted.
All right.
Yeah, you guys are really cool. All right. Here we go. Welcome to Security Guy Radio with Black Hat 2016. What's your name, sir?
Hi, Mike Pittenger.
What's the name of your company?
Black Duck Software.
And what do you guys do?
So we produce software that other companies use to scan their code, either source or binaries, to identify the open source that's being used in the code. Once we've identified open source, we can tell you anything we want to know about it. We've been doing it for 14 years. We have 1.5 million different open source components in our knowledge base. But what we'll automatically surface is the licenses it was issued under for people worried about IP risk from GPL licenses, if there have been security vulnerabilities reported against it. So there are 2,000 to 3,000 reported against open source components every year.
2,000 to 3,000? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's just an NVD.
Yeah.
And then we'll also give them a metric around operational risk. So larger companies want to make sure that the open source they're using is well supported. So we can tell them how many committers there are, if there are new versions of it out there, and that type of thing.
Okay, now, Security Guy Radio's reptilian brain has to get around this technically, right? So you guys are scanning the products that are scanning and protecting our network. You're like a compliance component for them, making sure it works?
So we do have customers who are software vendors or embedded software.
Right.
Most of our customers are large enterprises, technology companies. So think about, you know, we think of big banks as being financial services companies.
Right.
One of our customers is a big bank, but they've got 20,000 software developers also.
Wow.
So they're producing a lot of software.
Right.
And open source is becoming a bigger and bigger portion of that software every year. We do on-demand audits as part of our business. And 5 years ago, when we look at those code bases, those that had 50% or more open source was about 3%. Of those that we looked at. This year, it's about 33%. So open source, it adds so much value to the software developers because it helps them get to market quicker, it lowers development costs and so on. It's going to be adopted no matter what we do. So just making sure that you know what you're using and can track it over time as new vulnerabilities are disclosed is important to them.
Well, that's brilliant. Now, are hackers taking advantage of this new market and saying, let me make some fake open code and make it look like it's real and slip it in? And is that a way for them to gain access?
It did happen in the Linux community years ago.
Oh,
a guy found it. He didn't get it into the code base. He was in a discussion thread and said, hey, I'm having trouble with this library. People downloaded the library, and it had backdoors in it. It was caught quickly by the community, and that's typically what happens. You know, you have the many eyes theory that in open source, so many people are looking at the code base that you're going to catch a lot of things.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah,
but unfortunately,
it is.
A lot of them aren't security eyes.
So what is your company looking to gain out of Black Hat this year? What's the new element of your company that you'd like to promote?
Yeah, so a couple of things. Number one, we've been trying to get across the point that it's really good to use traditional testing tools like static analysis and dynamic analysis and so on. But you have to do that recognizing that they're not capable of finding the types of vulnerabilities that we're seeing in open source every day. So, you know, Heartbleed was in the code base for 2.5 years. I mean, how many thousands of times do we think that was tested by, or pen tested even by humans? And yet, it, you know, security researchers ultimately found that shell shock was in the code base for 25 years.
And for my nieces and nephews, these are viruses, bad cold, maliciousware, what is it?
These are just vulnerabilities.
Oh, vulnerabilities, okay,
instead,
right.
Instead of, like, not necessarily malware.
Yeah, right. He's the egghead and I'm the human guy. All right.
Yeah. Keep going. Keep going, please.
So we're trying to make them understand that it's good to do those things. We do them.
Right.
But as a larger and larger portion of your code base is made up of open source, you also need to be keeping track of that. So that, like when Heartbleed came out, everybody's running around with their hair on fire. Right.
Right.
They've got Nessus
right.
or Metasploit or Nexpose, and they're pointing at all their systems trying to, with the rule pack, trying to figure out where
everybody's trying to play catch up at the same time.
Yeah. Our customers type in OpenSSL. And it immediately shows them every version in their inventory and which applications use each version.
It's
wow,
a good tool.
That's fascinating.
Very good tool.
Yeah.
So what do you see as the biggest challenge for enterprise level companies that or tech companies that you're working with on a regular basis? What do you see the biggest challenges over the course of the next couple of years?
Well, from our standpoint, it's just making sure they're tracking the components that they're using.
Right.
Not just so that they know that they're secure when they release that product, but what happens afterwards.
As they become more in number, right?
Well, because and that and as those components age.
Right.
I mean, it's only software, right? It's not that it's more secure or less secure, but vulnerabilities do come up.
Sure.
And you know, again, it's not that it's more secure or less secure, but open source certainly is an attractive target for an attacker.
Sure it is.
They have access to the source code.
And there's a lot more users out there with
yeah,
it, right?
Yeah, we it's a target-rich environment.
Yeah.
We disclose the vulnerabilities, often with an exploit to prove the vulnerability. Most importantly, probably, is the support model. So if you license software, You have an obligation from that vendor to provide you with updates to tell you when there's a vulnerability. They're going to push
that
patch and so
yeah.
on. Open source turns that model on its head because you've
right.
elected to go to GitHub or SourceForge or wherever,
sure.
download that component, build it into your system, and now you have an obligation to monitor it so that you know when there's a vulnerability. And if you take that fact that there are over 100 components in the average commercial application, over 100 open source components.
100, wow.
And in our... in our study, about two-thirds of those had open-source vulnerabilities.
Wait, two-thirds?
Two-thirds of the commercial applications
right.
we looked at. So we're not talking
wow.
about vulnerabilities in the code they write.
Yeah,
we're
yeah,
just
yeah.
talking about vulnerabilities that somebody else has reported
right.
in the open-source components that they're
right.
using.
Now, by the way, great name.
Yeah, thanks.
you probably have to be 55 to understand what that means. You know what it means?
No.
See? Well, am I right? Okay, so there was a game called Black Duck, White Duck, and everybody sat around in a circle in grade school, and somebody walked around the circle and went, White Duck, White Duck, White Duck, White Duck, and if I tapped you, Black Duck, you had to get up and chase me.
Same thing as Duck, Duck, Goose.
Yeah.
Well, that's maybe the more politically correct version, right? But we call it Black Duck, White Duck.
Right.
But yeah, you know, so the Black Duck is that one line of code that's like maybe got a problem.
Yeah,
so, that's brilliant.
So we actually come up with a lot of reasons for it,
yeah.
but the truth is that the founder of the company found a little Black Duck injured when he was a kid.
Okay.
Nursed it back to health, named it after an army general.
Man, we have got a real story on
mine's
our hands
a better
here.
Story. Tell your founder the mine's a much better story. Right? But it is funny that it does kind of fit that model.
Yeah.
You're looking
sure.
for
that
one thing
that's
yeah.
out of place. Yeah.
Very interesting.
Very
now,
cool.
So I talked to a lot of internet people, a lot of coders. Carl Herberger from Radware is one of these industry guys that knows what's going on. We had an interesting conversation about where we reach a point called, I forgot what it's called. Anyway, so there's 12 notes in music, and eventually every song that could ever be written is going to be written. And he says, you know what, eventually the internet's going to become self-aware because every piece of code that could ever be written will have been written. And when you go to write a new one, there isn't any. And then the computer's going to say, I don't need to get your command, I'm going to go find one. That's the basis for artificial
yeah.
intelligence, right? Taking over, right? So where are we with this open source? Is it becoming the standard on the internet? You're saying 50% of people... Was it about 50% of people that are doing coding using open source now?
No, it's about 98% of the applications we test have open source in them.
No, 98%. Oh, but the number has gone up of how
but,
it's progressed.
But, yes, so 10 years ago, people were using our software to find open source, often because they didn't want open source in their code base.
Oh, that makes sense, yeah.
They didn't trust it. They
yeah.
didn't like the licenses it was issued under and so on. Now they're adopting it. The U.S. government has adopted open source broadly.
Oh.
In fact, they're looking at open sourcing the code that they contract for.
Oh.
So to add more and more open source. But you're right. We track over 1.5 million unique open source components.
Wow.
And every version of those. And we've been doing it for a long time. But that number grows each year because open source is more popular. People are contributing it to
it. I like
it.
The
more
idea. It's the collective... you know, genius of everybody getting together. Is it really done for economic reasons more than genius level coding, or what's the driver on it?
For companies to use open source?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's economics.
That's the first driver.
It allows them to get to market faster.
Yeah.
Without writing code from scratch. I mean, you can't really beat that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never really thought of that concept.
So.
Yeah.
Yep. World's changing a little bit, very quickly.
So the other big thing we're doing now around this is we're trying to double down on this. So there are a lot of vulnerabilities. It's more about now helping people fix those vulnerabilities. So we recently announced the Black Duck Center for Open Source Research and Innovation.
Black Duck has its own open source. Look at that.
That's right. So we do open source. Yeah. We do contribute to open source projects. We have open source some of our software. But now we're going deeper into it using machine learning, trying to identify it earlier. We have people have relied on the National Vulnerability Database for years for vulnerabilities reported. It's only a fraction of them, so we use VulnDB for more of that. And then we have a team in Europe doing more security research on the particular vulnerabilities, how to remediate them, or how to mitigate the risk from them.
This has been fascinating.
Very much so.
I learned something. Company name one more time?
Black Duck Software.
Blackduck.com? Oh, no,
blackducksoftware.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your name?
Mike Pittenger.
And your title?
Vice President of Security Strategy.
Excellent. Mike, thanks
Mike.
For coming on the
thanks
show. Appreciate
much.
It. And,
appreciate it. Have a great day.
Come on, let's do a 60-minute show one day.
Sure.
This is fascinating stuff to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
We can go a long interview on this kind of stuff.
It'd yeah, good. Absolutely.
Thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio.
Good.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right. Welcome to Security Guy Radio with Black Hat 2016. What's your name, sir?
Thank you. My name is Torsten George. I'm the VP of Global Marketing and Products at RiskSense.
And what does RiskSense do?
RiskSense, we're assisting enterprises and governments to reveal cyber risk, orchestrate the remediation, and then monitor the results.
Wow. I like the way that sounds.
Yeah,
reveal, orchestrate, and monitor. Those are
three simple steps.
Well, that's right. There's three simple concepts, because a lot of times people come on here and talk about these giant words that I can't pronounce, and boiling it down to something that's simple, three steps, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Keep your microphone just a little bit
sure.
like that for me. All right, so break down those three components for me. So reveal is interesting because what we're hearing at Black Hat is real time isn't real time. That guy might have been in there for a week or a month and you don't know it, right? So how does the reveal part work with you guys?
So I think the biggest challenge in cybersecurity right now is that we're living in a siloed world. So you have all the best of breed tools, and Target was a perfect example. They had all the right tools in place, and the tools worked. And then you have to, unfortunately, try to connect the dots between these tools.
Yeah, that's the challenge.
Each of them produces hundreds of pages of reports, and you would have to hire a legion of people to connect the dots. Unfortunately, there are no people out there.
Right.
We have a shortage. So what we do is we're ingesting all these different internal security sources. We're aggregating it. And then in the next step, we're contextualizing it. We're overlaying it with external threat data. We have our own proprietary technology that goes out into the darknet, looks at hacker forums. We have our own exploit writers that do proof of concepts. Because it's important. You might recall we had the Poodle vulnerability in 2014. That was rated by the National Vulnerability Database at a 5.5. No company is doing anything under a threshold of 7.
Oh.
But if they would have known that at that time there are hundreds of thousands of attacks, live attacks at that time going on, exploiting that vulnerability, you would have completely changed your priorities.
So where do you get your data to do the overlay?
So we have 60 external threat sources, and then we have our own proprietary technology. So we really go out in the internet. We look at the vendor side, because another thing is that you have to remember when a vendor posts that they have a vulnerability in their product, and before it makes it into the National Vulnerability Database, there's often a lag time of up to 120 days.
What?
Wow.
So during that time, you're basically having a blind spot.
120 days?
Yes.
Why is that? Got to go to the lawyers or something, or what?
Yeah, it's the process of submitting it and trying to score it.
How do you shorten that time? I mean, how do you?
Well, we in our case, because we have our technology that also looks at the vendor information.
Right.
We cover those zero-day vulnerabilities. We are already looking at what do they post before it even shows up in the National Vulnerability Database.
Interesting.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, we look at the hackers. What are they doing? What are they talking about? We're really grasping the communication. We're grasping the exploits and really take this into account, feed it back into the platform. And then very important for us, it's about cyber risk, not cyber security. Risk is made up of three factors: your vulnerabilities, your threats, but more importantly, business criticality. If
Absolutely.
I don't know the difference between a coffee server, which keeps my employees awake, but an email server, which keeps my business running, I might misalign my resources.
So turn your microphone just a little bit towards you.
Yep.
Like, good.
Yep.
Now, Ms. Charisse?
Yes.
This sounds like really cool stuff.
It is.
Have you heard of this kind of process and how they do it? It seems different to me. I don't know a lot about it, but it seems like it's a little different than the average people, the way you describe it.
The methodology is kind of consistent within the industry. Your vulnerabilities, your threats, and criticality of assets. Those are the key domains to being able to identify your risk posture. What I think is different is that they're really simplifying it down, because a lot of technologies, while they're there to help, can get very convoluted in the people aspect of managing and maintaining the data. And so how is your technology different in that sense?
So we have what we call human-guided machine learning technology as part of it. So a customer can define under which conditions they want to automate things or they want to do it semi-automatic. Another thing that is very unique to us, which is completely different from the industry, if you walk Black Hat the show floor right now, you see a lot of vendors and even end users are still focused on the network layer. Fact is, though, if you look at the post-mortem analysis of data breaches, that nowadays 84% of data breaches are originated in the application layer. So for us, we're looking at the growing attack surface. We're not just focusing on the network layer. We look at the application layer, at the human layer,
the
database layer. So it's very important to take all of these aspects into
account. I like this approach. I would describe this as offensive. Would you describe it as offensive?
We call it proactive.
Okay.
Yep.
Very similar,
offensive
yeah.
is offensive, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. Politically correct. I'm not politically correct. I don't care. But I like that approach. You're finding them before they get there, you're saying, listen, this guy's a level one today, but our analysis says he's going to be level seven next week. You better stop it now.
Exactly. And it's threats are changing in a minute, correct?
Right.
So you have to do a temporal analysis. You can't take snapshots. SIM systems look at things that already happened. You have to constantly revet. What does the threat do today? What does it do tomorrow? And the uniqueness of the company really results that we have a quite unique DNA. It's something that you don't hear a lot of times. We're a spin-off of New Mexico Tech, one of the leading cybersecurity programs from an educational point of view. Our co-founder and CEO was a professor teaching cybersecurity and got tapped by the Department of Defense, by intelligence communities, and worked for them for many, many years to help them define best practices. And after doing it for so many years, he said, hey, our knowledge, our expertise,
right.
we should bring to a broader audience. So that's when we put this into a software as a service model.
Okay, what's the second level you go to? We did the first one, which was we're doing the overlay, we're finding it,
yeah.
then we go to...
So now, obviously, we revealed the cyber risk.
You revealed it, right.
Now we have to really prioritize it and remediate it. The prioritization comes with the business criticality, as I talked about. So now we show you really a list. These are the five things that you really need to do if you want to operate your business. And we have built-in workflow engines. We have built-in ticketing system that allow
That's
now
key.
To close the gap
and operationalize
between
it.
Security and IT, correct?
Operationalize it. That's
and operationalize
right.
exactly. the recommendations.
And it goes even beyond that. There are two more concepts that we apply. So we offer so-called playbooks. We know IT is normally not as sophisticated as security. Sorry
yeah.
to
yeah.
embarrass somebody, but that's often the case.
The
and
focus
they would have,
is different.
Yeah. They would have to spend a lot of time to really understand what steps do they need to take to fix the things that security threw over
right.
the fence. We give them playbooks, meaning step-by-step instructions.
Oh, that's excellent.
Oh, that's
they
great.
Need to do. So it really
to
shortens
remediate.
The time to the remediation.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then very important for us is what we call closed-loop remediation. So a lot of companies, I have a vulnerability, fix it. Okay, IT guy goes, applies a patch if it's available, closes the ticket. Not a good idea in reality, because you don't know if it was effective or not. Maybe
right.
he made a mistake by applying the patch.
You have to test it.
We only close the ticket once your internal security intelligence tools confirmed that the vulnerability is no longer there.
And is that through an internal scanning engine?
Well, we use third parties. So we're Switzerland. Okay. We're kind of orchestration layer. So we integrate with Rapid7, Qualys.
All your big top names. Kind of,
yeah, everybody, we can ingest them. So we're not a scanner company ourselves.
Sure.
We're just that orchestration layer.
Excellent.
And then last but not least, that monitoring of results is one thing in a closed loop process that you really check that things were effective. But then also you have to see, are your investments, are your alignment of resources, are they producing the return on investment? So you want to show over time, okay, is my number of vulnerabilities going down? How much resources do I spend on fixing things? So that's what we monitor too, and we do that in a visual fashion so you can report up to the board, to the C-suite. They don't need to understand the nitty-gritty details of security.
Well, they want one page. Yeah. They want one page.
Exactly.
And we talked about that in some other shows. The visualization piece is kind of a new thing.
Yes.
Yes.
To get them to get it.
Exactly.
Not that they're not intelligent. It's just that their time is a valuable
issue. They have a different nomenclature, correct?
Right.
They're talking in business terms, and it's our job to translate basically from down the nitty-gritty security blurb up to business objectives.
Excellent.
This is fascinating. Give us your website address.
It's www.resense.com.
Excellent. And your name and title?
Torsten George, VP Marketing and Products at Resense.
You going to come on and do a 60-minute show with me?
Sure.
I think this is fascinating.
Excellent.
Yeah, I feel much better.
Absolutely.
Now, you got to put that on Security Guy Radio because I got hacked before I got here. So I need some of these layers here to help me out. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks.
Yeah, I opened up.
All right.
Welcome to Security Guy Radio with Black Hat 2016. What's your name, sir?
My name is Amit Ashbel.
What's the name of your company?
I work for Checkmarks.
Checkmarks. And what's your position?
I'm the director of product marketing, and I also do cybersecurity evangelism, what some people
Another
say.
New term I haven't
there
heard
we
before.
There we go, yeah.
All right. That sounds interesting. Explain that.
Well, actually, the idea is to be in the front of everything that goes on in security, specifically application security.
Right.
To be aware of the market, to be aware of what's going on, new trends, new attack techniques, new vectors of attacks.
That's a great way to describe
it. Most importantly, being proactive in the community and communicating these trends and changes and lack of or maybe gaps that are being identified.
Now, what does your company do specifically?
So we do application security solutions, and we concentrate...
Come this way a little bit. Sorry. Yeah, there you go.
Okay, we do application security solutions, and we concentrate on providing solutions that help the developers or help the enterprise organization to build in security from the start. So getting the developers to be part of the security offer or part of the security effort within the whole software development lifecycle.
So you mean to tell me that the developers aren't just innately coding securely?
Unfortunately, no. Developers today are measured mainly, in most cases, by the speed of which they develop the functionality.
Because speed times money.
Yeah, and of course, and the level of functionality, how many bugs are in the product.
And we learned from some other people that, what was the percentage? 50% of them use open source code, which is more problematic, right? Could be.
It's a good thing. Open source code is great, but,
It
has its own vulnerabilities that come along with it. You want to make sure that these don't make it into the product. Without you even knowing what open source is in your product.
Right.
So why aren't a lot of companies and organizations adopting this secure approach to their development?
So organizations have started to build up the understanding that application security and source code analysis is very critical for their final delivery. They're starting to build development or to bring developers into the process. The problem is that developers don't yet have the skills. What you need to do is actually to be able to provide a solution that will give the developers the ability to learn, to develop skills, while in the same time also help them remediate vulnerabilities that are developed or that are brought into their code by their own coding.
Now, where do you feel the responsibility lies? Is it on the organizations to train their developers or on, let's say, the universities that are teaching our developers to code in whatever given language?
That's a good question.
It's a great question.
It's,
I know because I have an undergrad in computer science. I was a developer in my early days, and they really focused on secure coding because we had a
They did in school.
They did.
They
Interesting.
Did because we have one of the first certified cybersecurity programs at the University of Texas, San Antonio,
okay.
that focused on it. Now, not all universities are the same, so maybe you can shed some light on that.
So if you talk to most graduates from computer engineering, you'd see that they usually don't have a lot of background in security. They might have heard about it. They might have had a single course about it, but it wasn't a major piece of their studies.
Nope.
In terms of responsibilities, I think it's the organization's responsibility. Once you've hired a developer, you want to have them trained for secure development as well. But obviously, it's ideal if we would have universities taking that up as well and providing proper education.
Security Guy Radio's small reptilian brain is having a hard time getting around this concept. As I'm Mr. Security, right? Mm-hmm. I live and breathe it. It drives everybody around me crazy. I don't get how somebody writing code doesn't think that their first responsibility is to make sure this is safe. I don't get it. I don't get it.
So the funny thing is that what you're saying is exactly correct, but if you look at bugs, so functionality bugs,
okay.
there's not much difference between a functionality bug to a security vulnerability, right? They're
okay,
both
going to
create some kind of problem
right.
for you and your user base. So that makes that question even more obvious.
Yeah.
But I would see really, too, it's kind of one of those, what's it called, getting to market quicker than your competitor. If they can pump out the code for the product and get that product on the market.
I get it, but there can't be that much of an additional time for security if you start at the beginning, right?
It's exactly the opposite, actually.
Oh,
what organizations are doing today is that they're doing their development. At the end of the process, they say, okay, let's do penetration testing.
They're all done.
Yeah,
when all done.
We're all done, let's do penetration testing. And then they start their penetration testing, and they figure out they have, I don't know, 200 vulnerabilities they need to fix. Now the process
that takes more time.
We're just about to release the product. We have that dilemma. Are we going to release or are we going to go back to the developers
hurts
to fix
my head.
All of
and
that?
And most times they release it and, we've got to patch out in 6 months to fix it.
It hurts my head.
Yeah.
Now, you talked about how they don't have the training and security, the discipline. Okay. So it's something they didn't put Security 101 on the curriculum for college or whatever. They could. That's an easy fix.
Yeah.
Here's my suggestion, though. I think it's more of a cultural mentality. I was a police officer. I'm about protection, keeping the peace, catching bad guys. You know, it's what I do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I do it well. But most people don't think that way. But very few people think like I think in that term. So I could see even if we put this in school, I'm not sure that it would translate into people saying, okay, I'm going to help keep the bad guy out. I don't think they get that. It's not an intellectual vulnerability. They can't get it. It's got to be part of your psyche, so to speak. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. And how do you get that to be
part of
your
that?
Culture?
Yeah,
so
culture,
what
yeah.
we believe you need to do and what we try to do is to provide the developers the platforms and the solutions to be able to learn and educate themselves and make it easy or make it fun, even make the education fun.
Make it a video game. They'll be all
so
over.
So show a developer how to hack his own code.
Right.
So I'm developing code and I find this vulnerability and then the platform tells me, hey, you got an SQL injection here. So the developer says, yeah, okay, what do I do now? And then the developer has a chance to go through a process of hacking their own code and understanding what that SQL injection means. That way, the next time, the developer would definitely not do the same mistake.
So now your service and your not software might be the right word, but you're getting hired and you're monitoring the code as it's being written to catch these vulnerabilities almost in real time as they come up. So they don't have to go back and spend a whole another quarter and another $1 million fixing what they didn't write in the first place. Is that a good way to describe it?
More or less. It's not necessarily only a service. We have our own full-blown solution. That can include a service as well. Different organizations
so
have different
platform.
Needs.
Yep.
Oh, it's
an automated
platform.
You just
kind of
run the code in, and it spits out where the vulnerabilities are. And
exactly.
gives you an opportunity
interesting.
To go back
okay.
and fix them.
So it spits out where the vulnerabilities are. It shows the developer what would be the easiest way to fix those vulnerabilities, the shortest way to fix those vulnerabilities, and how. Do it
now.
Really.
Be honest now. Were you guys black hats and now you're white hats? How do you figure this stuff out? Really?
Well, actually, it's quite simple. It's secure coding, and if you build up a flow of the code of the data that goes into the code and goes out of the code, the data flow, what we call the data flow, you can analyze where the data is going in the wrong way, where the data is exposed, where the data is at risk, and then tell the developer how to fix that. It's very, very simple.
What's your resistance in the sales department? People don't want you touching their code. It's my code. You're not smarter than me. I could see people saying it's mine, and I'm afraid to let you see it. Maybe,
you might break
right?
it.
Yeah. You might break it. It's proprietary. Do you have those kind of challenges?
So, yeah, but I think that mainly in today's market, because of the fast-paced development, the main problem that organizations face is when you introduce security, in most cases, you're slowing down everything.
Yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
the perception.
All right.
When, in fact, what you can do, if you've introduced it at the developer level, which is just like fixing bugs,
right.
you're going to hasten up. You're going to make the process much faster, fitting continuous integration environments, agile environments, DevOps environments, which makes it much easier for the developer to swallow.
And it speeds up his time, really.
It speeds up yeah. their time, and it creates much better quality of code.
Now, not to quote prices or anything, but is this something that a small business could afford? Obviously, we talk about the giant companies, that's a no-brainer. But medium-sized business that gets in this, a new guy that's maybe doing a startup for an app and he's got a limited budget, can he get into this space and afford you guys?
Definitely.
All right.
We have a lot of different ways that we deliver our service.
Excellent.
So one of them is the on-premise full-blown solution
right.
that is usually targeting the large enterprises. We also have service offerings, so cloud offerings where we can, you know, a developer or an organization, small organization says, okay, I want to scan this number of lines of code and that's enough for me. And that,
right.
you know, we adapt the price based on the needs and
well, that's
the
awesome.
Requirements.
Yeah.
So it really allows those startup tech companies to kind of validate their code and then pump out something secure
definitely.
Starting
yeah. definitely
out.
Does.
Now, what do you think is the biggest threat we have going on in the world right now with in the cyber world? What do you worry about the most?
Well, I don't think there's one single thing that we should worry about the most. I think that we should look at it as a complete infrastructure.
The world is one infrastructure wired together. Interesting. All right.
The world is one infrastructure.
Yeah.
All the platforms are interconnected today.
Right.
I mean, if you're looking at transportation, financials, they all have multiple channels to access their data. So financial organizations are being hit all the time.
Right.
That's obvious why it's a money thing.
Yeah.
But when we're looking at you know,
utilities,
transportation, industrials, mm-hmm. all of these are also a great risk because everyone's exposing more data today because businesses have shifted to the web. Even if you're a transportation organization, you know, it's not just your buses or your trains or everything. You have your online applications, scheduling and ticketing and all these kinds of things.
Yeah. You got a financial component inside that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
And
yeah.
you're constantly at risk of your
And then
data
you have
being
the explosion of the Internet of Things, all the interconnected devices and the code being insecurely mm-hmm. developed.
And that actually is amazing because these organizations are entering a market that the software industry has been in for a few, you know, like 20 years already.
Yeah.
So the software industry has learned a bit, and it's still having troubles with security. But if you take a, I don't know, let's say the classic example of a refrigerator,
yep.
a fridge, the company who built the fridge doesn't have previous experience
yep.
with security.
Well, that's a good point.
And
yeah.
they're now exposing a lot of data
yeah,
to
very
the
interesting.
Web.
I heard the city of San Diego just recently launched their smart trash cans.
Smart trash cans.
Smart trash cans,
right.
yeah. So
what do they do?
It compresses and it monetizes the amount of
recyclables or something.
Yes.
Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Hack the trash can.
Learn something new every
the
day.
Trash can.
That's probably
right.
coming
a
out
new
next.
Private eye tool, yeah. Give us your website again.
Our website is www.checkmarkswithanx@theend.com.
Okay, good. And your name?
My name is Amit Ashbel.
Amit, thanks for coming on Security Guy Radio. It's been a fascinating conversation. You want to come on and do an hour show sometime? Just let me know.
Definitely.
It's a very interesting topic.
Yep.
I'm glad. I feel a little better that these things are happening.
Yes,
right?
You got evangelists like him out there.
And I'll be an evangelist for you. That's kind of what I do, right? I want to get
yeah.
the word out, and I want to bring people to the table to say, listen, security is not just for some people. It's for everybody.
Yep.
You know, be involved.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Thank
thanks
you
a lot.
Very
great
much.
Show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Very. All right. Welcome to Security Guy Radio with Black Hat 2016. What's your name, sir?
Adam Kujawa, the head of malware intelligence at Malwarebytes.
Malware intelligence. It's
there
another new
go.
Word. We haven't heard intelligence yet. We haven't heard that word at this
we're,
place.
We're creating our own
and we're
cyber vocabulary.
By geniuses
yes.
here. All right.
I hope you hear it a
so
lot.
So I just downloaded this the other day.
Right.
And it found something on my computer. Not porn related. Just want to let you know.
Well, you know,
full disclosure.
To each his own.
But
no judgments.
It found something that the other people didn't.
Other people.
And I was very impressed by that.
All right. Well, fantastic.
So tell us about Malwarebytes and what you guys do.
We're any malware company. We were founded back in about 2004. Our CEO was a teenager who got infected with some malware.
No.
Found it very difficult to actually get removal of the malware. His products that he was using, the normal AVs, weren't working. Decided, you know what, screw this. I'm going to start actually making my own stuff. And he did.
Wow.
And so it's been over a decade now that we've been, you know, fighting the good fight. Our flagship product is Malwarebytes Anti-Malware. But we've also moved over into the enterprise side. So we have Malwarebytes Endpoint Security for the enterprise, which wraps together lots of different technologies we have to fight the malware and the attacks at various different layers.
And what year did he start it?
2004.
Four, and as a teenager. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So tell us how your guys are a little different than some other people in the space.
Well,
it seems different to me. I mean, it didn't interfere with my computer. It downloaded easily. It was fast. I mean, it was a lot better than some of these other things that just clog up everything. You know?
Yeah, well, we do our best to keep things lightweight. And we also really focus only on the latest threats, more so than anything else. That means that things that are being pushed by exploit kits or malicious phishing attacks and things like that, the malware that comes from those, we focus on that. The way in which we actually look for the malware is unique, and that we keep it more of a broad approach to capture things that we haven't even seen before.
So let's talk about that. You know, with all the different variants of ransomware that's out, how does Malwarebytes keep up?
Well, actually, we decided that instead of just using our typical technology to fight the problem, which a lot of other guys are doing, we started from scratch, and we actually built out new technology specifically for ransomware, which it hooks into the various behaviors of different processes on your system and looks for things indicative of ransomware, creating kind of a profile of what ransomware would be, stopping it, blocking it before your files get encrypted.
Now, for all my cop friends that don't know anything about computers, tell us what ransomware is.
Ransomware is literally ransom malware, just malware that will either lock down your screen and or encrypt your files and demand payments, usually in the form of Bitcoin, in order to unlock them.
Oh, Bitcoin.
Bitcoin.
So they can't take my credit card. I guess that's probably not a good thing. But what if I don't have Bitcoin? I'm out of luck.
You have to buy Bitcoin.
Bitcoin's hard to find or buy?
You have to buy it, install it,
and then... Now I'm all confused. All right, so you lock up my computer. I'm an idiot. I don't know what the Bitcoin is. I can't go to the deep web. I can't even go to page one without getting lost. Is my computer out of luck? That's it?
No, actually. There's lots of different ways to get rid of ransomware.
What are those ways?
Well, unfortunately, unlike other malware in the past, when you could get infected and then
use a tool to get rid of it.
Yeah,
right.
That's not entirely the case with ransomware.
Okay.
In some cases, you might get lucky. There might be a decrypting software out there that some
researcher... Is Malwarebytes doing that or working towards being a decryptor?
I think it's something the whole industry is looking at doing. Each different variant, every family of ransomware is different.
That's and that's the challenge of keeping up and being able to detect it in a quickly, timely manner.
Right.
Well, you can solve the problem if you catch it. Before they lock you down.
And that's the goal.
Right.
That's
but
the goal here.
After you lock you down, you're kind of out
yeah.
of luck, right?
I mean, this kind of attack, it really represents a change not only in how the bad guys are doing things, but how we need to start doing things and protecting ourselves, not just within the community, but even the individual user. You have to use backups. You have to have proactive protection in place to stop the ransomware from encrypting anything at all.
And we heard from some people today.
Ransomware's been pretty big. I mean, it's been still a hot topic.
But the Russians' organized crime are mad because they think it's cheap crime.
Right.
Yeah.
$1,500. It's a waste of money. Let's go make $900,000.
Right.
So they said one guy can make $90,000
a year.
And to them, that's peanuts, right? It's like, what's the investment worth? But that's $90,000 to some 14-year-olds, a lot of money.
Exactly.
If people involved in it. Do you find that people involved in this are, you know, yes, they're criminals per se. What are they from the criminal families, or are they just some people that want to be independent operators?
Well, I mean, you've got your big families that have been created probably by the people that were associated with different malware families in the past, but there's things called ransomware as a service, which basically is...
Yeah. Tell us about that.
Yeah, basically...
We heard that term.
Somebody creates ransomware and says, all right, pay me money, I'll make this custom made for you and let you distribute it however you want.
Oh, I got a lot of computers I'd like to lock down.
You don't need any technical knowledge or anything. Just got to have money.
Just hire somebody.
Exactly.
Is that the new form of like the script kiddies, where it's just using someone's pre-made script and then becoming a hacker when you really don't have the hacking
capabilities?
Yeah, pretty
much. I mean, at this point, I don't think these people are looking for notoriety as hackers. They just want to get paid. And that's why ransomware is so popular.
Just criminal thieves then.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, you can steal passwords and credit card numbers and stuff like that. Then you have to go out and try to sell them on the black market.
To make money.
Was always, you know, the return of investment was very small.
So this cuts out the middleman, basically.
Exactly.
You go straight to the direct buyer that information is important too.
Now, here's the thing. I was a cop 13 years, and then I ran security a lot of places. And people always say, it's easier to get a gun in America than a library book. And I go, you're so full of crap. I would not have the first idea of where to go find somebody to hire to get ransomware. And I've been arresting criminals for 30 years now.
Yeah.
Right? How do people find this stuff? How do you know?
I don't know, Adam.
There's...
You know, I know you know. You're not going to say. I know you know.
Google.
I mean, is it that easy? You just Google it?
You can Google how to find these different places. A lot of these forums that people are selling this stuff on, they're on the dark web. Yeah. So it's
we used to call it a Whereas site back in the day. Those are the bad sites.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, when you say dark web, you know, do I have to go down to page 400 to find it? Or is it, you know, the first five pages of Google? Or where is it?
Well, usually it's if you know a guy who knows a guy who knows a guy.
Yeah.
So
you get a specific and you have a certain program running, you can access some.
Exactly. You got to know the address.
Unmarketed type.
You have to be trusted.
You have to know where you're going.
Look at her when she smiles. She's lying.
Not that I've been there.
Oh, no. You totally have. All right. So what's law enforcement doing about this stuff? Is it just too big a problem?
No. Law enforcement is trying to tackle it themselves. A few different law, like precincts or police stations have been infected with ransomware.
Oh, interesting.
The FBI themselves say do not pay the ransom.
I thought you read they said pay it.
No.
They first were saying pay it.
That's what we were told yesterday, that's the recommendation. Because in most cases, people don't have the systems in place to go and get the bitcoins and or the machine is not worth what they're being held ransom for.
Yeah, but it comes down to a risk versus reward kind of thing.
Now, has your company done anything as far as... if I was coding your company, here's what I'd do. This is free. I always do this. I always tell people how to make their product better, right?
Yeah.
I would say, okay, I'm going to protect your computer, blah, blah, blah. But here's my other option. Back all your crap up to my cloud, and I'm going to encrypt and lock it up for you. So this happens, we can automatically restore your computer. Because most people don't want to get into all that, sign up for Dropbox, blah, blah, blah. Anybody ever thought about doing that kind of thing? It's a value
add. You know, Google has their own backups. There's lots of different solutions out there. I know you said you don't want to worry about setting up Dropbox. I don't know if there's any solution out there that's that easy.
Well, but I'm saying if I'm going to hire you guys and put your software there, and it's an all-in-one, one-stop solution,
yeah,
might be attractive to some people that are less sophisticated.
So you're saying Malwarebytes as a company to provide the backup solution?
Yeah. I mean, you know, because you're doing it in real time. You're capturing this guy, and let's say you did get locked out. Let's say they got past your search and they locked you up. That's okay. Malware still restores it for you.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're going to keep your data no matter what happens.
Yeah.
Just an idea.
Yeah, it's an idea, yeah.
You know.
I'll bring it up.
Excellent. What do you guys have on the drawing board? Anything new that's coming up?
Our anti-ransomware product getting the technology put into our endpoint protection product. So that's going to happen at the end of the month.
Okay.
We're just discussing it. Yeah, we actually announced it today.
Wow.
Talking about it.
Hot news. You heard it first on Cyber.
Oh, is this another Security Guard Radio exclusive?
I think so.
Or semi-exclusive,
yes.
Maybe. All right. Now, phones? We didn't talk about phones. Does this work on... Are people locking your phones? That's what I would do. You want to get people pissed off and pay you money, lock their phone.
There is mobile ransomware out there. Wow. We have...
I think that'd be a bigger market. Because everybody's got a phone where they don't have a computer.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, but you got to consider things like different kinds of phones might work. Phones are more locked down than most desktops are.
Oh, I see. As far as security and
capabilities.
In the first place. Yeah, okay.
Getting infected is a lot harder on the mobile side. It still happens a lot, especially if you use things like third-party app stores.
Oof. Right.
Or download
I don't know anything about that.
There you go. With that, I don't know anything about. Of course you do. All right, well, give us your website again.
Malwarebytes.com.
And your name?
Adam Kujawa, Head of Malware Intelligence.
Adam, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks
for coming on Security Guard. It's been really fascinating. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
And that's how we roll. 10 minutes and 1 second.
Wow.
Let's get that.